Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello friends, and welcome to Hat Jam, the original music podcast where each week we challenge a musician to write a song from scratch by playing the musical game of chance, Hat Jam. For those who are joining us for the first time, Hat Jam is a game where we ask musicians to put two names into a hat, which is filled to the brim with many other names. We then ask our musician to draw two names from that hat, one name to inspire our chorus and one name to inspire our verse. If anyone panics at any stage, we also have a wild card deck, which is designed to throw a spanner into the works of our songs. I'm your host, Cav Templey, from Eskimo Joe and other such places, and I will be joined by Studio Cat, who will be fact-checking and pressing pause. This week, we have travelled all the way to Laurel Canyon in Los Angeles to the home and jam room of Mr. Ben Lee. Ben is a prolific artist who has put out many, many records. He's just put out a brand new record with Radner and Lee called Outside In, and his record Awake is the New Sleep turns 15 this year. A word of warning though, before we continue, Ben will offer me magic mushrooms in the first 10 minutes of this podcast, something that I wouldn't normally do, but in the sake of creative experimentation, I chose to follow Ben on this journey. I know that magic mushrooms can damage your brain, so I'm not condoning the use of drugs to anyone. But if you're offended by drug use or by Ben Lee, then I recommend turning off now. For everyone else, on with the show. This is Hat Jam. Hello, Ben.
Hello there.
Welcome to your jam room.
Yeah, welcome to our house. Yeah.
Thank you for having us into your space. It's very, very cool. You've got drum kits set up here. There's a junk kind of kit set up. There's many guitars and lots of, you know, records. There's a picture of Tom Waits, who I love. I feel like looking on the walls here, if anyone was looking as well as listening, they could actually see a kind of a roadmap of your life so far. How long have you been living in this jam room and writing?
Yeah, well, I only already lived in this house with my wife, and then I moved in probably like 13 years ago, and, but pretty much before my daughter was born. So she's, you know, 10 and a half or something. So around then we really like created a space where I could work. And so for the last decade, I've made tons of records in here, had lots of amazing musicians. And basically the only reason I go out of this room to record is if I need to do several mics on drums or if I want a lot of people playing at once. But for most projects, I just kind of work on them in here and I feel very creative. And I actually just spring cleaned because I was apprehensive about having you guys in here, partly because it was getting a bit dusty and I was feeling creatively stagnant. So yesterday I literally took every guitar, everything off the bookshelf, dusted it down.
I feel honored.
And I feel the energy is like open again in here. So I'm excited.
It's like a musical rent inspection.
I was thinking more like a restaurant, checking there's
okay.
no rats.
Oh, yeah. And okay, nice. Like, okay,
no,
yeah,
like, the hair nets. Yeah, on the
music,
cooks and
music inspectors yeah. make sure the music is you know, up to standards. So look, I'm just going to start talking about some of the stuff on the walls here because there's lots of cool stuff. We have looks like a gold record here for Awake is the New Sleep, which is 15 years old this year.
That's true.
You have made many, many records, prolific amounts of records if you go into your Spotify account. Why do you think that Awake is the New Sleep resonated so much with people and was, you know, was such a big record for you? I mean, like, was there anything different you remember about the writing or recording process?
I'd have to say, I was thinking about this the other day because it was 15-year anniversary the other day, and I did – a lot of people reached out with very heartfelt comments, and it's almost like as you get further away from some of these events, you can see them clearer.
Yeah.
And I would say the central takeaway I have about why that record connected the way it did was to do with whether you call it – coincidence or zeitgeist that an experience I was going through happened to be an experience that a lot of people were going through at that time. And that was to do with a new sense of possibility or a reprioritizing, a reshuffling of my priorities occurring in my life and beginning to center my life more around things that had like a real like positive vibe to them. You know what I mean? Because I think like I look at it as like all experiences and all thoughts are open to us all the time, and we can go down a lot of different roads. And that's part of what's fun about art, that you can sort of be a tourist in a lot of different types of journeys. But sooner or later, you have to curate your own journey and what it's going to represent and what sort of the almost like the message of your life is going to be. Like if you keep changing roads every 2 minutes, you end up with like a chaotic life. Whereas if you go like you pick a partner and you marry them and you go, I have a career, and there's still room for change and all that, but there's sort of a sense of like some form of commitment comes. And for me around that age 23, like I was having this deeper sense of what I wanted to be committed to, and that it should be something that makes people happy, and that should be something that like I feel is like a real contribution. And I think in that way it was like sort of simple, and it resonated with a lot of people.
So Tom Robbins, The Jitterbug Perfume is one of my favorite books, but can you tell us how you turned B is for Beer into a musical?
He called it a children's book for grown-ups, a grown-up book for children.
Yes.
And honestly, like I knew I hadn't read the book. I found the book, and when I picked it up, I knew the world Tom inhabits. I knew what his value system is, and I knew his other work. Mm-hmm. And I knew the title, B is for Beer, and I knew the premise, and it ticked so many boxes for me of what I like about art. And so I just read it in an afternoon, and one of the things I sometimes get people coming up to me saying, I just did a show the other night, and people go like, you should make a record for children. And I always say, I'm not interested in making music for children. I'm interested in making music for the child in the grown-up. That's what I want to do, you know. And Tom's similar. Mm. Like Tom doesn't want to make stuff for kids, but he wants to connect grown-ups to that sense of wonder that's childlike.
Yes.
So, you know, it's been this decade-long process of turning this into a musical. And
but you've got – the music's up on Spotify.
Yeah, music up on Spotify with all these great actors, and we're currently working with Starburns, who do Rick and Morty and did Anomalisa, the Charlie Kaufman claymation, to turn it into a feature film.
Great.
Musical. So –
yeah. How much of the musical part of it was informed by anybody else? Did you just kind of get free rein to run for it, or was there a collaborative part of the musical?
Well, there's no financiers or anything. Like, so this was just a project. I don't know if I set out a bad vibe, like, or something at the beginning of my career, but for whatever reason, I've never had, none of my projects have happened with someone coming up to me going, hey, I'm going to pay you a lot of money to do something and you're beholden to me. Well, it happens to artists going on labels where like I've never made demos for anyone. And I think part of it is like, you know, I remember reading about like Neil Young making, what was the feedback record? Arc, was that it?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's sort of like someone said, you only have to make one of those records and everyone will leave you the fuck alone for the rest of your career. And it's really like that. Like, I think I've done enough things that the industry hasn't known what to do with, that they go, okay, let this guy do his thing. And if we can sell it, we'll sell it. But I don't give off the vibe of someone that's like asking for input, because I'm not, basically. So with this, it's just something I was doing and just working with Tom and working with my own kind of, I'd never written a musical. I'm not a huge student of musicals. Like I do love, there's like three or four musicals I really love.
It took me a long time to come to a love of musicals. And I think having children who love musicals has brought me further. Yeah. I'm like, well, I think I get this now.
Yeah. After like the 10th time you have to listen to like the third version of Annie, you know, so you're like, okay, I'm in.
And before we jump into Hat Jam, can you tell me, this is a question I ask all of the people who come on this mind bending show that you're on. When do the ideas come for you?
I don't know if it's possible to answer that because it's kind of like saying, how does intuition work or how do dreams work? Like, I sort of think it's not my business. My business is attention to them when they do come. So, like, if I have to, I could probably spend a lot of time analyzing the exact science of when ideas occur, but I'm so seduced and enslaved by them that I'd rather refine my process of like subservience to them. So I don't know. It feels different, but I am getting better about not letting them go. But you know, at another time, it's also like a very light touch. Like I'm into like, I really think seduction is like an amazing science to understand for artists, because the muse, you know, that's like a personification of the feeling of inspiration. It responds well to seduction as opposed to neediness or desperation.
Sure.
And if you have a slight light touch where you could always walk away, it tends to help. It's almost like you're in a relationship where you start looking at each other as equals.
Yes.
You're not like in codependent thing where one has all the power and the other doesn't.
You can't be desperate about the ideas because just like, I'm sorry, you're just coming on too strong. I'm out of here.
Totally. And you're also then, if you're needy, it's almost like, you know, you have friends who start dating and they so want a boyfriend or girlfriend that they like, they overlook red flags.
Yeah.
It's the same with creativity. Like, not every idea is gold. And if you're so needy for it, you're going to confuse every idea with being the work of genius. And it's not. You have to be able to walk away and be patient, you know. So before we started, I was thinking, do you want to eat like a tiny bit of mushrooms? I was thinking like a quarter of a dose of mushrooms. So it's really like, you know.
So I'm now going to take a small dose of magic mushrooms while I attempt to write and record a song with Ben Lee and host a podcast. So let's see what happens. So now we've had our not quite microdose, but quarter of a dose of mushrooms. Yeah. And we're about to venture into the world of Hat Jam. Are you ready, Ben Lee?
I'm no, but let's do it.
So we're going to get you to present two songs for the hat, and we'll take it one song at a time. So first song, what song are you going to enter into the hat today?
Well, I was thinking about this for a while. I mean, I can't believe how much work you're making me do for this. Like, I've literally been thinking about this for like 3 weeks. I go like, but the songs that kept coming to me, like I wanted to be genuine, you know, like.
So what's the first song?
So the first one, Going Out West, Tom Waits.
Oh.
I mean, what I love about his career is he got weirder and better in his 40s and in his 50s.
I reference him all the time as a place that you can go to, you know, post your beautiful 20s.
Yeah,
you know?
and marriage was what did it for him.
I know, and that I find that so romantic. So Kathleen Brennan, for people who are listening who don't know the story, Tom Waits was kind of had this cool kind of jazz cat vibe in the 70s.
Like a beat thing.
Yeah, yeah. It was a character that he'd really created for himself. In the 80s, he met his wife, Kathleen Brennan, moved to New York, and started making the best albums
of
his career. Got sober.
Yeah.
And he met his wife doing a movie called One from the Heart, which was a Francis Ford Coppola film. And she was the script editor on it. And so when those guys met, she was really great with the lyrics. And it, from Swordfish Trombone onwards, which is my kind of favorite era of Tom Waits, the lyrics just got cooler and weirder, and they were about this world he started to create. He had already created this world, but it was like LA sleazy.
It was a world we'd seen.
Yes.
Whereas the next world, and it's interesting because I remember when there was an interview where they said, how did your marriage change your writing?
Mm.
And he said, oh, that's simple. She had a cooler record collection than me.
Yeah.
And she turned him onto Captain Beefheart and Sun Ra and this whole other world of like experimental music that he'd sort of was still in the 50s, 60s, like Kerouac, Bukowski archetype of masculinity and stuff.
You know? She forced him to grow and break out of that thing.
I find his relationship to his masculinity to be like, actually really healing because you know, there's all this talk now of like toxic masculinity and these, and a lot of I think men struggle with what does it mean to be a man, you know? And when you hear Tom Waits, you know, in this song, Going Out West, he's talking about driving out to California to be a movie star, basically, but he's sort of like a character actor, but he went and he says, you know, And one of the lyrics is like, the chorus is like, you know, I know karate, voodoo too. I got hair on my chest. I look good without my shirt.
Yeah, yeah. I look good without my shirt.
And, you know, he's like not what you'd call like a stereotypically, you know, macho dude, but the confidence in his genuine manhood is so cool. And I think that's with like great rock stars like Iggy Pop and Nick Cave. I like that they're often like kind of somewhat effeminate, but there's a machismo in their embrace of who they really are. Yeah, David Bowie too, you know.
That's a great word. Yeah. So the second song.
Yeah.
Like I say, that's going into the hat. We've Ben has presented us with a hat today. It's a German...
It's like a Bavarian folk hat.
Yes, it's perfect. We'll take some pictures of the hat and put it on the Instagram so you'll be able to see it. The second
song I chose is the song that was playing in this house when I first walked in here and met the woman who I would marry 10 years before we went on a date. I was 18. I was just out of high school, and they were playing Bob Dylan's Desire, and I only knew like Bring It All Back Home and you know, those Highway 61 Revisited and the folky kind of one.
Sure.
I hadn't gone into like his 70s kind of
Blood on the Tracks and
hadn't explored that yet. And Isis was playing, and I remember looking across the room, and he was singing that lyric. I was thinking about turquoise. I was thinking about gold. I was thinking about diamonds and the world's biggest necklace. and I felt that something was calling me. And funnily enough, that record is probably my favorite record of all time. It's the record I most deeply associate with the woman I ended up marrying, the house that I live in. Mm. It's very interesting. So Isis by Bob Dylan.
Fantastic. Into the hat it goes. Okay, so now, Benjamino, we are going to shuffle up the names in the hat. So Ben is about to pull out the first name out of the hat.
It's from Josh Pike. It's the Doobie Brothers, What a Fool Believes.
Yes. What a Fool Believes. So we're going to have a listen to that song now and then come back and talk about it, analyze all the bits and pieces. I'd just like to say a special shout out to my friend Tony Burke, who's playing keyboards on this. This song is exceptionally complex and there was no way I was going to be able to play it. So let's have a listen.
He came from somewhere back in how long ago. The sentimental fool don't see, trying hard to recreate what had yet to be created. Once in her life, she musters a smile for his nostalgic tale. Never coming close, what he wanted to say, only to realize it never really was. But she had a place in his life, and he never made her think twice. As he rises to her apology, anybody else would surely know he's watching her go. But what a fool believes, he sees the wise man has the power to reason away what seems to be is always better than nothing.
Studio Cat, have you got any facts that you can enlighten us about Doobie Brothers' What a Fool Believes?
What a Fool Believes is a song written by Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins, best known.
Kenny Loggins,
that's it. So the best version, best known version, was recorded by the Doobie Brothers. The song was one of a few non-disco number one hits, which is interesting. The lyrics tell a story of a man who is reunited with an old love interest and attempts to rekindle a romantic relationship with her before discovering that one never actually really existed. So it was a foolish love desire more than anything.
So it's this like really interesting piano progression, right? It's quite complex for a pop song. So it's like laden with harmonies. I mean, it's a doozy of a song because the chord progression is like really complex for a pop song.
And but so can we can be inspired in by different aspects of it, right?
If we start here and end up somewhere completely different, then that is totally okay.
Because to me, the most interesting thing about the verse is that rhythm, the rhythm. Like something like that, like with the way that melody, it's not a catchy melody to me, but it's like creating some kind of like little riff around that or something, you know.
Also, love. I mean, when Josh put this into the hat, the one thing that we pointed out, which was amazing, is that these guys existed in an era where it was okay to be like bald and like middle aged and be like a really huge rock star,
right? Because there was no music videos.
No, but they were amazing players. I mean, I think Michael McDonald came into the band quite late. They'd already had a bit of a career, and then he came in as the hit maker because he like sung on everybody's songs. And
Kenny Loggins actually released a version of the song 5 months earlier. The Doobie Brothers, on his 1978 album Nightwatch. But his version changed all of the gender pronouns, so it was sung from the female perspective.
Interesting.
Cool. I guess they weren't writing too many songs.
I think we should what kind of instruments do you think we need to get this song going?
I mean, I'll just pick up a guitar.
You grab a guitar. I'll grab a bass or something like that. So the one of the first things that occurs to me about this tune is the kind of rhythm that's going. It's got this, you know, even in the vocals and in the music, it's got kind of all got this.
Yeah.
Even the bands all like boom 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 boom. Even obviously terrible chords.
Yeah.
So it's got this kind of feel going on.
Yeah.
And the vocals seem to follow that groove, so it's like, you know, and then they're obviously quite complex chords. We can ignore the chords, it's very cleverly written, obviously by some fairly, you know, ace songwriters.
Yeah.
But hey, Ben, it's you and me. We are the fairly ace songwriters here today. So yeah, my suggestion is let's come up with something that's kind of got that rhythmic aspect.
Yeah, that's what I was feeling. I was just feeling like there's something. Something like that.
That's
kind of cool, right?
That's a great groove.
Yeah. Maybe we play sort of against the idea we are the protagonist that's the fool. Like maybe it's more like the song's about what a fool believes what he sees, right? Basically, like there's a sort of superficiality or something that.
Oh, no, it's basically you can't reason with a fool. Because the fool will believe what they want to see.
Yeah.
They want to see the magic. They want to, as you were saying before, which is really interesting, about sometimes when you're in a relationship, you don't see the red flags.
Yes.
So it's all about that.
But also the fool, like in the tarot, is the innocent. So in a way, you can't reason with the innocent because they're telling the truth. You know what I mean? So maybe the song's more from that, like a celebration of foolishness. Like it's because it's so groove based. Mm-hmm. Like you want to just be able to like play it and loop it, and then like almost like freestyle the melody maybe a little bit away from the actually playing an instrument.
Absolutely,
like, you know what I mean.
Like, so should we just get a little loop of the bass and the guitar doing this groove, and then
maybe add some drums or something?
Yeah, we can. And then there's some four on the floor. Boom, chu, boom, chu, boom, chu, boom.
I'll start again. Three, four.
Great, so that's our bass and guitar loop. Let's see what it sounds like with some drums on top.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, I think my fear of this, my reluctance to it, was that I can't pretend to write a song, right? So like, I think that something got expressed in this little part of the song, which was that, like, as artists, we're not performing animals. I mean, we're not like circus animals. Do you know what I mean? Like, we if we're going to open something up, it's like, I remember that story of Jim Carroll being, they used to do a poetry reading, they might still do it, in St. Mark's Church every day, every New Year's Day. And all the poets would come and read it. And Jim Carroll, they invited him and he came up and he threw up on the podium of the church. And everyone was upset with him. And Patti Smith was like, you guys, this guy wrote the Basketball Diaries. Like, he's a junkie. You invited a junkie onto the stage of your church and are angry at him for throwing up. It's like, are you taking no responsibility for what you're opening up, for the can of worms you're opening up? You know what I mean? So I think for me, what I get in this song is this, and I like when I tap into this, a type of hostility.
So at this point in time, would you like to write some lyrics or just continue to do what we've been doing so far, which is just, we've got this groove, we've kind of come out of this rhythmic idea of what...
I think we should write the next section.
The next section. Okay, so are you ready for a chorus?
Yeah, because I don't think you need to finish... Obviously, you can't finish one section before another. It's all got to work together.
Sure.
I think there's enough in this. There's a feeling, there's an attitude, there's a swagger, there's a tone.
Let's call it section one. Are you ready to draw another name from the hat?
Let's do it.
Now,
let's
there's something
it.
Else I want to bring to your attention, sure, which is this little purple box right here. This is the wild card box. So at any point in time in the podcast, if you feel like you don't really know what to do, you can decide to draw a card from the wild card box, and that's going to like take you on a slightly different...
Yeah, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, so...
I mean, I feel like my entire mind is a wild card box.
I feel like, Ben, you are the wild card. You are the biggest wild card we've had on the podcast so far, and I'm loving it.
Ultimately, what makes podcasts interesting, because I like to listen to podcasts, is when there is a genuine interaction, not just people showing up and doing their PR or whatever. So
absolutely.
I came into this and I continue in this process trying to actually be transparent about what feels good, what doesn't feel good, and see what comes out of it. It might not be, who knows if a song is going to get written. I mean, I think that you have to, as a creator, you know, sometimes we get what we want. Sometimes we get something different, but it's interesting, right?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? People are tuning in because it's interesting. It's an experiment.
And I think you have to be very brave to do this stuff. Like, whether you're just writing a song for yourself or you're coming into a podcast where you're being forced to write a song in a day, there is a certain amount of, you know, you've got to be brave because you're putting yourself out there and you're also going to hopefully tap into things that are real and personal
for you as well.
So anyway,
okay, cool. Should we do another one?
Let's draw the second name from the hat, ladies and gentlemen.
Time Warp by Rocky Horror. That's good.
How interesting. We talked about the Time Warp before.
We did.
So this would be a good time for us to have a listen to the Time Warp.
Yeah.
And just, you know, familiarize ourselves in what the Time Warp sounds like.
So the chorus is basically dance instructions like The Locomotion or any of those sorts of songs that are instructing the audience of what to do, because it's a very interactive musical to start off with.
Yeah, that's in the verses, right? It's more like do this. Or is that kind of like...
No, it's just a step to the left.
Yeah. See, I love that in relation to the song we're writing. Is this entertaining? I mean, like... You know, giving some people like, you know, in a kind of cynical,
in a cynical,
slightly aggressive way of like, you know, do you want me to do this? Like,
here's
the dance steps, and I'm your monkey. You know,
I like that. Yeah.
Well, obviously can't say dance monkey.
But so that's that always comes after the chorus in the song. So it's kind of like it's got like a B part to the chorus.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it's like a bridge that repeats after every chorus. Kind of.
Put your hands on your hips.
Because it's character based.
Yes.
That's another thing with this song being a musical. I love musicals.
Yeah.
It starts off with riffraff, then riffraff, magenta, and Columbia, then the narrator.
Yeah.
So it's going to and from all different parts, and then my favourite part, which is the real bridge, which is Columbia's tap dancing routine.
Okay, cool. Well, let's have a listen to the time warp, and on a Hat Jam first, Studio Cat, would you care to join me in a rendition of Let's Do the Time Warp?
I'd be delighted.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control. But I remember doing the time warp, drinking those moments where the blackness would hit me and the void would be calling. Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
Well, I was walking down the street just to having a think, when a snake of a guy gave me an evil wink. He shook me up, he took me by surprise. He had a pickup truck and those devil's eyes. He stared at me and I felt a change. Time ain't nothing, never would again.
Woohoo!
It's astounding.
There's like, it's all character stuff because it's a musical,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the production of this was like hot on the heels of like, you know, your Bowie and...
You know, those are like the Cars or something?
Yeah, there's a bit of that in there. Because Rich O'Brien couldn't sing either. He wrote the whole entire thing.
Let's do the time warp again.
So the chorus is basically dance instructions like The Locomotion or any of those sorts of songs that are instructing the audience of what to do, because it's a very interactive musical to start off with.
Yeah, that's in the verses, right? It's more like do this. Is that kind of like...
No, it's just a step to the left.
Yeah. See, I love that in relation to the song we're writing. Is this entertaining? I mean, like... You know, giving some people like, you know, in a kind of cynical...
It's like robotic.
In a cynical, slightly aggressive way of like, you know, do you want me to do this? Like, here's the dance steps and I'm your monkey, you know.
I like that, yeah.
Well, obviously can't say dance monkey.
But so that's again. That always comes after the chorus in the song. So it's kind of like, it's got like a B part to the chorus.
Yes.
Oh, it's like a bridge that repeats after every chorus, kind of.
Put your hands on your hips.
Because it's character based.
Yes.
That's another thing with this song being a musical. I love musicals.
Yeah.
It starts off with riffraff, then riffraff, magenta, and Columbia, then the narrator.
Yeah.
So it's going to and from all different parts, and then my favorite part, which is the real bridge, which is Columbia's tap dancing routine.
Cool. Well, I like the idea of that. The way they do Let's Do the Time Warp again, that I think could merge into what we've done.
Yeah,
like
totally.
We've got this thing that's got a real groove.
Yeah.
And if it becomes this thing with stops, I don't know what it's going to say. But then I do like your idea of the dance steps after.
Well, I really...
Almost like instructions for survival as an artist or how to sell out or something.
Yeah.
Or call and response.
Or how to,
this is what I'm going to do to entertain you. And it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. This is what I do.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. That's cynical. That's okay. Sure.
Okay. let's get some lyrical ideas for that down and then get some chords to back it up.
Ooh.
That's cool. I like that as a chorus.
Yeah, same. Oh, I don't forget where we're up to, sorry.
Pardon?
Sorry, start again. Yeah,
two, three, four.
Do we want a lyric for that or just ours?
No, we want lyric.
Yeah, okay.
Well, because it's like, I even like a let's do something again.
Yeah.
Is it the act of needing the audience's love and of compromising yourself?
Well, I mean,
what does it feel like?
For me, it's like, let's do that dance again. But I mean, I don't know how it is for you, but whenever I perform songs on stage, and I mean, it's possibly different for you being a solo artist, but being in a band, I feel like the whinging lead singer sometimes because I'm like, no one understands what I go through emotionally. But every time I'm on stage, I have to relive whatever experience I've written about.
Yeah.
And I don't go as deeply as I did when I was drawing that story out of myself in the first place. But to have some emotional...
It's got
to
be real.
Yeah, to have some emotional connection. So I feel like there's something in that. It's just like, you know, watch here we go, you know, watching me... I mean, the obvious one is Bleed for You One More Time, or...
It's. I think it's not the right word, but I think it should feel like, let's do the heartbreak again.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Something
though.
Like that, you know?
Yeah.
Let's do the heartbreak again.
That's great.
Let's do the heartbreak again. My friends, is it too? Maybe like flip them, do them one each way. Like, let's do heartbreak again. Let's do this and bring my friends. What is it?
There's also that relationship with the audience where you're like, they're like your best friends and your enemy at the same time, you know what I mean? Like
totally.
Sometimes you get on stage and you're like, you know, come on, I'm working here for you, give me some love and respect. And then sometimes you feel this harmonious when everyone's pulling together in the audience together.
Right, and ultimately, though, I think the reason I thought of heartbreak is that ultimately the experience is, you know, there's a quote I love from Ron Howard about directing movies, and he says, ultimately every project, if you let it, will find a way to completely breaking your heart.
Yes.
And it's something about, because as an artist, and there's another story I love about a guy who went to learn piano from a piano master. It's like an old Polish story or some Russian story. And he's getting better and he says to the teacher, why is the sound coming out of my fingers never as good as the sound I'm hearing in my head? And the teacher says, what makes you think that ever changes?
Ooh.
And that's the heartbreak, that as artists we're reaching for something that we cannot have.
Can that be the second time? I love that. Let's do the heartbreak again. What makes you think this ever changes?
So it's a fun, it doesn't sit totally right. Is there a way? There's but I like the sentiment of it, right?
Yeah.
That in a way it's like a willing servitude.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was saying. Like you're in this, it's a relationship and there's not much that can be done about it actually, except seeing it through.
Yeah.
I think we're supposed to be friends.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. Like with the audience.
Yeah.
Like I think we're doing this together, aren't we? Let's do the heartbreak again. It's got like an all apologies thing.
Yeah,
give you that little
harmony. Totally. Yeah.
That's great. Beautiful suggestion, that chord.
Yeah,
ending
cool.
on that.
Yeah,
that
nice.
G is really like unexpected. It's very it's also very like 60s birds kind of thing, like something. There's only one way this can end.
Oh, that's good.
Let's do the heartbreak again. There's only one way this could end. And then it's something like da, 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 my friend. Back to let's do the heartbreak again.
That's a cool idea. So yeah, we start with the heartbreak line. Got two lines in between, and then we end with "Let's do the heartbreak."
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. I
okay,
like that.
Let's do the heartbreak again. There's only one way this can end. There's something about the vulnerability of talking to the audience there and saying, "My friend," like we need, like as much as an entertainer, you can resent entertaining.
Yeah.
You need the audience.
Yes.
Or do we go totally hardcore? I mean, there's always the other. There's okay. Let's do the heartbreak again. There's only one way this could end. I used to think we were friends, but let's do the heartbreak again. So my impulse, I don't think you'll like, but I think it's done.
Okay.
And it just ends there. It's like 40 seconds.
The 40-second song.
Because I don't feel excited to do anything else. Because that's sort of like, I think you got to trust that a little bit. Like there's a lot of conventions about what makes a song and what makes music music.
Sure.
But why is 40 seconds of music less relevant than 3 minutes or 4 minutes?
Well, I guess, you know, it's how long it takes for an idea to form in your brain and how we take that in and how we kind of process that.
Like, I think when you're working, especially in collaboration, it's like, I always look for, like, when I'm in a room with people, the person who can't sit still because they actually feel inspired. Like, everyone's got ideas.
Yes.
But there's someone who it's like an itch that just desperately needs to get this vision across.
Yes.
And that's, and everyone else is kind of like taking up space if they talk.
We're not heart surgeons. We're not here saving people's lives. Yes, people might come up to you and say, when I was going through this, I listened to that song and it changed my life. Like, that's an important thing. And music affects us in this way that we can't really put our finger on or maybe want to explain. But I do feel like we are entertainers. Like, we get up there and shake our ass on stage because part of us wants to show off. And
I want to be, like I said, why I dreaded doing this was because I knew I would have to be authentic. I can't do it any other way.
Yeah.
And I also know that it's like, it's not tidy. If you're authentic, you know what I mean? So I actually really love what we did there, but I also, it sounds like complete to me, but I would offer that, like, to the listener, that removing some of the traditional thoughts of failure and success are actually part of what makes expression possible for a creative person. I'm actually loving this whole process.
Yeah, cool.
And I think the battle over these things is what creativity is actually about.
I do think that that is the key of collaboration as well, is that, you know, sometimes, you know, you'll do something in a room and it'll feel fully formed and you put it out and you're like, I feel pretty happy with that. But I feel like there's a key point in collaboration where it's uncomfortable and someone will pull you out or disagree with you and you go, I think you end up in this place that's really interesting that you never thought that you would end up.
Yeah, and I think that also the uncomfortable nature isn't always something – like it's almost it's kind of capitalist to like think you have to push through it and that there's something basically that sees an uncomfortable spot as an obstacle as opposed to an expression.
I think I do personally see breaking through as an obstacle every time. I mean, you know, capitalism aside, I think a large part of me is always thinking of a song I've either heard yesterday or a song that I've grown up with where I'm like, well, that's, imagine if I could write a song like that. So I'm always thinking of this final product of the craft of a song and how I can get to that place, because, you know, part of what drives me is never thinking that what you've done is ever good enough, and you think that you could possibly achieve something better over here. You know, just for me, that drive is always like, I want to get to that place. You know, you get to the top of one mountain and you go, oh, but look at those mountains over there.
Yeah, but sometimes it's something new is what you hear. Mm. Like sometimes what you make, if you hold it up against, it has to be like Don Henley or whatever, some song you love, you know, it's like in some ways that can cloud an appreciation for what actually occurred.
You do realize I'm totally going to edit this into like an almost 3-minute song.
that might be an expression of your, like, that predicament is actually very interesting. That predicament of, do you just say, I feel like I've done what I can do creatively. It doesn't feel authentic to me to continue. And you're left with this thing, right? Yeah. You have then decisions to make that are going to be, there'll be your inner voice, which could be in conflict to mine, which is, it might just be the most authentic thing for you to do is to turn this into a 3-minute song. But I think the more interesting question is not where does it sit in the pantheon of pop music, as opposed to what are we doing here? Like, to me, this is not about crafting a hit song. This is about an experience of writing.
Really, this is about taking as many options away as possible. And
I'm taking more away.
You are. And I love that. Not only are you, Ben Lee, you are the wild card. I'm just going to put a new wild card into the wild card deck, which is just says Ben Lee.
But honestly, you know what would be cool, I actually think, is if you treated everything we got as found material.
Okay.
Like, you could do something like what would Moby do with these tracks?
Yes.
What would someone who likes found material do? And I wouldn't expect you necessarily to honor me with something authentic to me if it was authentic to you. If you don't and you want to play the 40 seconds of music we made, I feel good about that too.
Okay, good.
But I just kind of want, I just want to be real, like with the audience, you know what I mean? Like, that's the whole push and pull with the song for me is about how far can you bend before you innately compromise something kind of almost like spiritual to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as soon as it hits that point, it's the job of the artist to stop it.
Well, the whole idea of this podcast was to look at songwriting in a left-to-center way. What happens when we put artists in a situation where they have less options and not more? So now we're going to hear the song that myself and Ben wrote together, and like an old record discovered by DJ Shadow and then turned into something beautiful, a butterfly, if you will. Here is Ben Lee with Let's Do the Heartbreak Again.
Let's do the heartbreak again.
This entertaining for you. This entertaining for you. This entertaining for you.
So, Ben Lee, thank you for joining us on a magical journey where we, you know, slightly microdose on mushrooms.
Magically unsatisfying, but yeah. I hope, you know, I hope that's part of life too.
How do you feel? You feel vaguely unsatisfied? But
no, I actually feel quite good because my challenge for myself was to be open to the experience but not to do anything I'm not comfortable with.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like not in the way of like out of my comfort zone, in a way that like really doesn't feel like me. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I feel like in that way, given insight to the listener to songwriting, the way I do it. And so I think I feel good about that.
If people want to find you on the internet, reach out to you, listen to your music, can you give us a description of where they would find you?
All my socials are Ben Lee Music. They could probably figure out the spelling, I think, on their own of that. No K's or anything in it.
And if people want to reach out and send you a message on the internet.
I mean, I prefer they didn't. Yeah. But if they really feel just compelled, don't. Just do it through the social media.
Yeah,
I only say that because
Most every artist I've said, how can people contact you? They basically
like through my manager?
Yeah, yeah, just don't. Just leave me be, man. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, Ben Lee, for having you into your jam room in the beautiful Laurel Canyon. Yeah. This has been Hat Jam, ladies and gentlemen.
Hat Jam!
Woo!
Hat Jam!
If you enjoy Hat Jam, then head over to our Patreon site and look for Hat Jam.
If you're interested in hearing more about any of the artists on Hat Jam, then please head to our Facebook page, Instagram, or website and follow the links.
You can find Cav Temperley on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Cav Temperley or www.cavtemperley.com.au or follow us directly on at hatjam_podcast. This has been a Temperley production.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.